everybody. Gareth Ed Skewed and Reviewed here with Justin. We are doing our special Halloween Skewedcast. We always promise to get one to you right around the end of the month. And, of course, since the end of the month falls on Halloween, we figured let's do it on Halloween and make things really fun with a little bit of Halloween-themed reviews and entertainment. Now, Joseph wanted to be here this morning. He is actually moving to a new place, so his stuff is all boxed up, but he's going to be back for the next show with some new stuff. And we also had Alphonse had some Gabe had some interesting stuff, and he said he would be joining us soon. But for now, we're going to be looking at some stuff that you can do for Halloween. We're going to talk about some new DVDs. We're going to be talking about some new video games, as well as looking ahead at some Halloween-themed and horror movies, sci-fi games, and movies that you would be interested in seeing, as well as what we think are some of the better horror DVD and films, as well as games that you may want to check out. Some of them are not exactly widely well-known, and you will want to stay tuned for that one. So starting off, we are going to talk about some new games that have a Halloween theme. And also just wanted to mention you can check us out at sknr.net. That is the website. We also have our quarterly magazine. We have our new issue almost done and ready to come out. We have various syndication out there, and you can also catch us in the Maricopa Monitor and their new network of papers. We're about to expand to six paper content at the next few weeks, so we're really looking forward to that through a new portal. And of course, we have our syndicated radio show out of Seattle on KISW-FM, BJ Shea's Geek Nation. You can catch us there. We have a really interesting segment that is going to be going up on Monday, and we'll have that on the site as well about G-Sync technology and some other interesting new things for gamers. Now, speaking of games, there's a lot of new games out, and some of them are an interesting mix of old and new. One of them is the new System Shock Enhanced Edition. Now, for those of you who may not remember, System Shock and its sequel, System Shock 2, creative title, were Origin games. And for those who don't remember Origin, and I feel like I'm dating myself, there was a time before Origin was something more than EA's online portal for gaming. This was a company that always did cutting-edge, innovative games. You would probably know the Ultima series from them. And they did tons of games, Crusader, Ultima, so many more, and they were always the standard. And this was back when, you know, your Apple II was one of your standard gaming platforms. Their stuff was ahead of the curve, always pushed the boundaries. And System Shock was a game that, as they moved into the PC era more and more, was a mix of first-person shooter role-playing. It was about a evil artificial intelligence called Shodan that takes over a computer network on a space station, and you have to survive. Now, very good game, obviously spawned a sequel, still considered one of the best games of its type. I got to say I was a bit surprised when they offered me an enhanced edition. I had a vision of the game with modern graphics. Now, that's not the case. It is still the older game with the pixelated pre-3D graphics. They've just been cleaned up a bit. There's been some new features added and some new fixes for some various bugs and stuff like that. So if you want a retro game with retro graphics and gameplay that is still exceptionally very good, you will want to check out the enhanced edition of System Shock. So, swinging over to the newer games, one of our great new time killers and curse-inducing games is Guitar Hero Live. Now, the great thing about the new Guitar Hero is that they completely changed up how everything works. You don't have the five buttons in a row anymore. What you do is you have three up and three down, so it plays more like a guitar would. You have to sometimes put your, you know, middle finger up, lower finger down, and lower finger far left down, that sort of thing. And as the notes are scrolling out, you get the little symbol saying up, down, that sort of thing. Well, as the game goes on and the songs go on, they get harder and harder because some of them are spread out. Some of them could be, you know, two high notes left and right as the bottom one down, and they come faster and faster, making you really have to work your fingers. So it's much more like a real guitar. the other twist is they have full motion video on it, and it's done from the stage point of view. So if you're hitting bad notes, which you will a lot, the band will start, you know, shaking their head and asking you what's wrong, that sort of thing, and the crowd will start booing you. So of course you always have to go into hero mode to redeem it. It's actually a lot of fun. There's a lot of fantastic, great songs out there, and for my money, of the guitar-based games, this one is the one that has actually given us the greatest challenge and has provided new content that is actually worth getting into, in that they're not just giving you the same thing with the new music track, so you will want to check out Guitar Hero Live. Now, on the more casual things, Jen is actually playing these quite a bit. You have Super Mario Maker, where you can go out and make your own custom Mario Brother Worlds and share them on the Nintendo Wii U. We're going to be doing a write-up on that very soon. We mentioned it briefly on our last show, but it is definitely really a lot of fun. The one that we're really focusing our attention on right now is Yoshi's Woolly World. Now, anybody who's played any of the Nintendo games knows that Yoshi is the dinosaur companion for Mario. Imagine the universe has now been changed to an all-wool universe, and Yoshi, or another Yoshi, can go through, followed by gigantic balls of yarn. You can use Yoshi to eat the other enemy creatures he comes across. You can jump on top of them, but you can also use the yarn to fire targets to bring up other things to jump on them to move over. There's puzzle solving, platform gaming. So think of it as some of the best elements of Mario Brothers with Yoshi, but in a wool setting, and you're starting to get the idea. It's very colorful. It's very fun. There's boss battles at the end of levels, and the co-op on it is fantastic. It's a very interesting, very challenging universes that are set out, and it's definitely a lot of fun, and for me it shows just how good Nintendo has done in the last year or so with their fantastic lineup of new games and such. So do check that out. That is Yoshi's Woolly World. And finally, we're going to swing over to movies. And I wanted to mention that, first off, if you want a comedy, you need a break from the horror, Trainwreck, from the folks who brought you Bridesmaid, the Amy Schumer film, is available from Universal Home Entertainment, and you can get it on Blu-ray. Blu-ray comes with Blu-ray and DVD versions, as well as digital HD. You get the deleted scenes and gag reel, and so much more. It, of course, has got Ultraviolet, which is becoming standard now, so you can take it on the go and watch that. So that is Trainwreck. And that will be available soon from Universal Home Entertainment. Now, fans of superheroes, we talk about them a lot, would be happy that Batman, the original television series, the complete third and final season, is available now from Warner Brothers, or soon, from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. You got Adam West, you got Burt Ward, you've got Cesar Romero, Burgess Meredith, and all of the classics. You got Eartha Kitt as Catwoman, and you also have some other great celebrities, Vincent Price, and so many more. It's campy, it's outrageous, and it's definitely highly entertaining. They've all been digitally remastered, and you will want to check out the third season of Batman. Another film that you will want to check out, it's a series actually, from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, is called The Leftovers. It's a very interesting psychological drama and thriller. Don't want to give away too much about it, but let's just say I think you'll find it really interesting. It's, the title makes you think it might be one thing. The show actually is another, and it really is captivating and entertaining. Lots of bonus features, content. You can check that out. All right. So here we are, Justin. It's Halloween.
Yes.
So far, nobody's egged the house. We haven't had any trick-or-treaters come to the door. And it's time for us to take a look at some of the scarier options that are out there. So let's start off with the news that broke the other day that Neil Blomkamp's Alien film has been delayed, put on hold, some say scrapped. What's your take on it?
I think it is just on hold. I would not say it's scrapped quite yet, just simply because I don't think they would have put the effort into, finding him, and then so soon after he started the writing process, just scrapping the whole movie. What I think this is more just a strategic move, to let him have the room to write the movie, without it being technically in production, and then by the time Paradise Lost comes out, that they can start working on the next movie. Because, you know, Paradise Lost is going to come out first, so, and that's at least a year away, so that means whatever he works on is at least 2 years away. Like, they don't need to be working on it right now.
Right.
So I don't think there's really any reason to be worried.
My concern was he did mention that he would be moving on to other projects.
Yeah.
Or and working that, on that other projects.
That is a concern, but I think, like, he can... I think it's possible for him to work on, you know, another movie, whatever he wants to work on, and release it, and still have the room to make Alien 5. And even if the timing doesn't work out, it still shows that the studio is interested in an Alien 5, which is also very important. That, you know, come a year from now when Paradise Lost comes out, they could, if they can't get Blomkamp, then they can get someone else, because it, you know, they've already expressed interest into, you know, continuing that series on the back end.
My concern on this is I wonder if Blomkamp's, I mean, let's be honest, Elysium and Chappie did not light up the U.S. box office like they had hoped.
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's playing into the picture.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, Elysium, he had pretty legitimate reasons. Like, he gave an interview, and he gave some pretty legitimate reasons why the writing in that movie didn't really hold up. It didn't really hold up to his own standards, and he basically had said that, you know, he prioritized things wrong, that he made a mistake, so he owned up to that. For Chappie, I haven't seen it, so I can't really judge it, but yeah, I mean, he has delivered to, at least according to, like, most audiences, pretty subpar movies,
right,
in a row, which is a concern. But at the same time, District 9 still holds up very, very well.
Right. And see, here's how I kind of see the whole thing. To me, it's kind of like a swinging pendulum, which is similar to the way Hollywood works. The next Prometheus film, or it's not really, you know, Alien Paradise Lost, if it's a hit, then boom, not only are you going to see the third film in that series, then you may see some interest in this Alien 5. If that thing doesn't go up to expectations, then I think the whole thing's dead.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I wouldn't be surprised even if Ridley Scott takes on Alien 5, because it's obvious he's very, very interested in, you know, continuing this franchise.
Yeah.
He seems to want to own what's going on, because if you notice, like, when Alien 5 was talked about, that's when he got real serious about talking about the Prometheus sequel. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in the backdoor meetings, Ridley Scott said, hey, just pump the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
Wait till you see what I do with Paradise Lost, and then maybe we can talk about Alien 5 after that.
Yeah, because it's been very interesting, because, you know, he was always like, oh yeah, we're going to explore Prometheus, we're going to explore it, it's this, and then all of a sudden Fox comes out and says, yeah, we're doing this Alien film with Blomkamp here, but don't worry, it's going to work in connection with the Prometheus films, and Scott's going to produce that. And then all of a sudden you have this quiet phase, and then all of a sudden here comes Scott going, not only am I doing this one, I want to do two more, and yeah, I'm going to be producing that Alien film, and you know what, this thing's here, it's actually an Alien film, and we're going to have the facehugger in it, and we're going to tie it all into it. And I'm like, this was not the tune that you were spouting during the Prometheus promotions. You were, oh, the creature's played out, we need to move away from that. Yeah, it's set in the same universe, it's got this DNA of it, but it's not the same film. To now, he's basically flat out saying, yes, they are prequels, yes, they are all connected, yeah, they're going to be tied together, and I've got at least three more films planned.
Right.
So, you're right, it is interesting how his, you know, which, how much of it is him basically saying, okay, I'm not going to play the, you know, as someone called it, the J.J. Abrams, no, it's not Khan, what do you know, yes, it is Khan game.
Right.
And, you know, so on and so forth. So anyway, tell us a little more about it. You always have good thoughts on things like that.
Well, yeah, I think that's my general sense of it, is that he is sort of trying to own this franchise and kind of make it his sort of universe. I mean, if you kind of look around, like, shared universes, I mean, this isn't technically a shared universe, but, well, you know, actually it does. It shares the universe with Predator, but it's the huge kind of, like, universal franchises are real popular nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, heck, they just announced King Kong and Godzilla are now, you know, a thing that they're going to be doing now. So,
yep.
I think that kind of goes into it, where I think Ridley Scott sort of wants to, I just get the feeling that he wants to sort of own this franchise,
yep.
And that maybe he had some influence in getting Alien 5 on hold. You never know, maybe they had creative differences on, you know, his vision for the franchise and Blomkamp's.
And that's what I'm wondering, if that's starting to swing more and more toward it, because, you know, there was that discussion about how they had to alter a couple of things in his version to make sure it flowed with what Ridley's doing with the next Prometheus film, which time was a Prometheus film. Now it's an Alien film.
Exactly. And I think, ultimately, I do think we will see an Alien 5, just because of what I mentioned. I think the studio's interested in it. So
the only problem with that is Sigourney Weaver's not getting younger.
Being
mean, but, I mean, she'll say it. I think she's gone out in interviews and said, hey, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Let's move this thing along here.
Well, I think that's also popular nowadays. I think a lot of studios are realizing that. That's why we got a string of Die Hard movies,
mm-hmm.
and why we got, you know, an Indy 5 and maybe now an Indy 6. And, you know, even Star Wars, I think, plays into that a little bit, because, I mean, look, Mark Hamill was as old as, actually older than
Alec Guinness
yeah. was. So I think that had some influence into making Episode 7 even, is that, you know, if we want to use these actors again, they're all getting old.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts a fire under these studios. So it's, you know, looking at Sigourney Weaver, it's like, well, you know, she's getting up there. If we want to do anything with this hugely lucrative franchise, we got to get her now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned Die Hard. Did we discuss what they were talking about doing for the next Die Hard film? I actually, now that I've had some time to think about it, I think it's actually a clever idea.
I remember reading something about it, but I don't really recall what
basically
it was.
Basically, what they want to do is do it in a flashback. They'll have Bruce Willis do the beginning of the film and the end of the film as a frame around, and it'll flash back to something that happened while he was a cop in the 70s.
Oh, that's cool.
And they talked about a TV series that they had at the time. A comic book series, where they discussed him, you know, foiling some plots as a cop in the 70s and that sort of thing. And I think that got them thinking, going, well, this is kind of how it could be done. And I think the idea wouldn't be McClane sitting there around the fire basically telling his son stories, although you could do that. You know, just bring Jack Courtney in for a bit, sit him down at the bar and say, okay, Jack, I'm going to tell you about something, you know, it happened in the 70s. I think what the idea might be would be something along the lines of the film will open with something, you know, like maybe a 10-15 minute segment. And so he's about to get the drop on the guy, whatever, and he finds out it's connected to what happened in the past. So then they would go flashback to the past, do all that, and then maybe occasionally jump forward to show, you know, what's going on in modern time and how it's connected, with the, you know, intention that eventually we would see a series of younger John McClane films. There was some talk that they would try to get Sam Jackson back as Zeus, but, you know, I like it. Like you said, we're seeing how can we move the franchise forward but still retain some of the talent that made the show so successful. So, interesting stuff there. Now, moving on, we talked about that. And for those that are in the Southern Cal area, I do want to mention that Disneyland, Knott's Berry Farm, and Universal Studios all have their Halloween attractions going on right now. They are going to, some of them are going to go on into next week, so you do want to check that out. We have some photos up from the Universal Studios and the Knott's Berry Farm one. Disneyland always does a fantastic job with theirs. And we'll be doing Christmas coverage, actually, from Disneyland this year, where we're going to try out the new Hyperspace Mountain, the new Force Awakens Star Tours-themed attraction. And all of these are going to start popping up in November, and they're going to run through January. So we'll have some coverage of that, just as a minor aside. So, Justin, let's talk about some DVDs and horror movies that are not so commonly known, but I think would be, very popular for people. Now, a little preface on this is when I was in the military, I had a lot of, during my downtime, I used to go through a lot of, at the time, VHS tapes. And my buddies and I would go to the local video store. I know, go figure. There was a time where there were video stores. And we would just go and get whatever, or they had one on base. And didn't matter how bad, how independent it was, we would just grab it and put it on. It became kind of like an early version of Mystery Science 3000, which would debut a little later, where we'd just sit there, watch the films, make fun of them. And we would see things like Microwave Massacre, Nail Gun Massacre, good enough, let's go, boom. And you didn't care, because it was like, oh, this is going to be, bad. And so every now and then you'd get one and you'd go, wow, this was like really, really good, but it's not one that's been widely adapted for mainstream. Now, one of my favorite series was the Night of the Demons series. This has become, there were three films in the series. This has become a very, cult film. A lot of them have made it onto DVD now. The whole thing was about a former mortuary slash area called Hull House, and the kids would go for their Halloween party. Well, the interesting thing is it was surrounded by an underground stream, and according to legend, demons couldn't pass a source of flowing water. So it was all about the folks who would come into the area to have these parties and events, but unbeknownst to them, Angela, the head demon, and her minions would be roaming, and they would all get trapped in the area, all sorts of mayhem. And it had, some clever things. You had some interesting characters, and it was just different from what you would get in most of these films. So that one was definitely one of my highlights. Another one was Rawhead Rex, which was another demonic possession film about a creature called Rawhead Rex. You think, oh, it's just going to be a standard monster on the loose film. Had a little more to it. My final one is a really, really, really hard film to find. Apparently, it was an Italian-made film. And I've actually looked it up over the years, and it's never, you can't really find it easy. I guess there was a lot of controversy about some of the content, and there were some distributor issues and stuff like that. And also, it's actually had different titles depending on the market. When I saw it, it was called The Mutilator. And essentially, the guy had a hook, and he, would take people out with it. There was some, without giving things away, there was a lot of controversy about a certain scene on how he dispatched a woman and whether or not certain things were happening while he was doing it. And it caused it, a lot of outcry about it. But, that aside, it was actually a very interesting and refreshing take on the, psycho killer on the loose, which has been done to death. Some very good, some very badly. But those are definitely the ones that I look for. So what about you, Justin? What do you have for us?
I don't know if I have any that are those sort of like hidden gems that I saw throughout growing up. Just sort of like the standard ones, The Shining, Alien, obviously one of my favorite horror movies, if not my favorite one. But as far as like recent ones, I think that really stuck with me. One that's actually on I don't know if it's on Netflix still, but what was it called? It's an Australian film.
Wolf Creek?
I think, okay, so I heard good things about that one, but no, it was
Well, tell us about it.
Okay, so basically, it's about a single mother and her child, and they're living, you know, they're in Australia, and the kid is sort of, you know, really difficult to deal with, and they find this book, and it starts haunting their house.
Huh. I have not seen that one. That actually sounds really interesting. And you know, while you're doing that, I was thinking about AMC the other night was putting on
The Babadook.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay, got it.
I'm sorry, I completely spaced on the name. But yeah, it's The Babadook. It's very was very good. Not only was it like very scary and very spooky, it's not a lot of jump scares, more just like a slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very thoughtful. Very good writing.
I'll have to check that out because, you know, the interesting thing is my wife does not like horror films, and it just doesn't happen. I tried to get her to watch It Follows, which was a new horror film that I definitely enjoyed. I thought that was one of the more refreshing horror films, and she wouldn't do it. It's like every now and then she'll watch something, but it's weird. She'll watch The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Go figure. But then again, who doesn't watch The Walking Dead? And,
exactly.
You know, it's kind of like the whole thing with AMC Networks. And by the way, we wanted to mention before I forget, I know it's Starz Network, Ash vs. the Evil Dead premieres tonight, already certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, already got a full season order for season 2 before the season 1 premiere. And we have an interview with star of the series, Jill Marie Jones, audio interview up on the site right now, so you do want to check that out. Anyway, so switching gears on that, we are, you know, going into all this horror stuff. They were doing the Halloween marathon the other day, and it seemed to me like they were running to commercials every 6 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
So they have one of these, you know how those films are always loaded with TNA and all that, so the girl's taking her shirt off, and I'm thinking, oh, we're actually going to see a Hooter on TV. Oh, and cut to commercial. It's like, couldn't have timed that any better, could you?
Yeah, that's pretty typical.
Yeah. So, which is kind of funny. I mean, you know, there's definitely a debate to be had about the whole notion of what's acceptable and what isn't. Like, for example, you go over to Europe, in Germany especially, they will have nudity on television. That's not a problem, even in the commercials. But they're not big on the graphic violence. So, like, you know, I'm sitting here watching these Halloween things going, all right, so he just decapitates the one girl. He impales the other one, and he hangs the other one and slits her throat. Then he takes two knives, pins a guy to a door, watches him while he's pinned to the door above the ground, opens the door, and walks out. That's all perfectly acceptable for broadcast, but God forbid you show a boob.
Yeah. Our priorities are just sort of, it's always been kind of strange. Like, we just love, like, horrifying, mm-hmm. you know, disgusting things, but, some things that, you know, I think most people would think are pretty good. it's just too much.
And let's be honest. If you asked most guys in a horror film audience, okay, you can watch that chick take her top off or we can cut her up to pieces, I would like to think most guys would say, well, can she take her top off first?
Yeah.
You know,
why can't we have best of both
right,
worlds?
It's the one that says, cut her up. Those are the ones that you got to watch. It's like, no. We like you said, we can have both. That's the whole thing. But see, then you have that whole debate that's been going on forever about, you know, it used to be, when I was growing up, an R-rated horror film was standard. They, you know, you made a PG horror film, people wouldn't even bother because what's the point? And you know, it was kind of like the core thing. You know the rules. You got to put the kids together. You're going to have the, you know, the sweet innocent one is usually the last one left. You're going to have a nude scene, and usually they're one of the first to go. All those things, and then it all started changing right around Scream, ironically, where all of a sudden you didn't see the nudity in the films. You didn't see, you know, you started to see the PG-13 where it was, you know, the guy stabs and that's it. You don't see him stab and stab and stab and stab with splatter going everywhere. So, you know, it's interesting to see how that all plays out, and I'm really curious to see which way it'll go. All right, so now we're getting ready to wrap things up with the scary video games I've got a couple, but I'm curious to hear what you have.
So the one I have is Colat, which is a I have two. There's two that are I think are very good. So I'll start with Colat, which is a indie survival horror game by Polish developer IMGN Pro. And I don't think this might be their first game, but if you've played Slender Man, it plays very much similar to that. It's I guess to get the downsides over first. It's sort of a walking simulator. Like, really not a lot happens. It's you sort of walk around in a wilderness and you collect items to sort of uncover this mystery. It's based upon a real life event. Sort of. It's sort of quasi-based on this real-life event called the, I'm going to maybe butcher this, Dyatlov Pass incident, in which I think this happened in the 50s, where a bunch of climbers and explorers in Russia were out in the wilderness, and they went missing, and, no one could hear from them, so they sent out, like, some search parties. This was, like, in the dead of winter, so... it was obviously a cause of concern. Well, eventually they found the bodies of all of the people who went missing, and there was a whole bunch of mysteries that are still today unsolved as to how they died. Some very weird sort of things that just about how they found them. Like, some of them were not clothed. Some of them were missing. Like, one guy was missing his jaw. It was just very, very strange, very grotesque kind of things. And so this game sort of takes that, and you are an investigator. You play an investigator kind of trying to uncover what happened. And I think what it really excels at is atmosphere, because you really feel alone. And and sort of that just... isolation in the mountains, basically, in this sort of the thing, or at the Mountains of Madness kind of feel, where you're just alone in this sort of icy blizzard environment, uncovering like the sort of grotesque mystery. Works very well.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And what's the other one that you have?
The other one that I think really impacted me very well was Soma.
Mm-hmm.
By the developers who made the Penumbra series and Amnesia. So obviously they have a very high caliber with horror nowadays. And Soma is a science fiction horror, and it takes place at the bottom of the ocean. So immediately for me, like, that is a sort of a setting that really gets to me personally, just because, just underwater stuff in general, for some reason... it's just incredibly terrifying for me. Without really spoiling anything, it has a really great story, and it has a lot of killer robots. So that's the general sense of it, and it plays a lot like Amnesia. Basically, you have no weapons, but you walk around and you have to kind of avoid use stealth and avoid your enemies.
So are you saying that you are not a fan of Deep Star 6 and Leviathan and things like that?
It sort of depends. Like, I underwater stuff fascinates me. Mm-hmm. If it's horror based, like I don't know, about BioShock had a little bit of horror in it, yeah. But like something like this, or I don't know, even parts of the Abyss, like, it's just it can be, I don't know why. For me, more than probably a lot of people, it just sort of terrifies me, the idea of just being stuck underwater.
Yeah, then you wouldn't have liked that summer very well. They had Deep Star 6, Leviathan, and The Abyss all came out within like a few months of each other.
Oh, yeah.
That was like, Hollywood gets on their themes, like you have those disaster movies and all that. That was their big theme that one year, so... Interesting, interesting, interesting stuff. Well, see, mine is not nearly so, I guess mine's a little too, I guess mine would be more mainstream stuff. And what I have is now, of course, I don't scare easily. I'm not one of those people who I can, like, go to haunted houses and things like that, and they don't bother me. I remember years ago when I was an exchange student in England, our dorm was next to a cemetery, and I would actually walk through the path on the cemetery back to the dorm. And so, you know, you had the typical moonlight, dark night, fog-covered, you know, things. And people were like, you're crazy. How can you walk through that? And I was like, yeah, you know, doesn't bother me. So, you know, there it is. And they were all like, well, you won't go out there on Halloween night and do that. And I'm like, yeah, what? You know, it's just, you know, it's just me. Anyway, so that being said, when I, you know, when you get something that makes me not want to go about normal activity or to, you know, really pause, it's done its job. And with that is the first two Dead Space games absolutely, you know, had me to the point where, you know, you're a bit on edge going, I don't know if I really want to walk down that hallway. I don't know if I want to go into that darkened room because I know there's going to be something in there that I don't want to deal with, but unfortunately I'm going to have to. And so those definitely, you know, for me, gave a good story as well as a very creepy, moody, atmospheric game. Another one, of course, would be Alien Isolation, which has just put out the new Alien Isolation, you know, collection, where you get the game as well as all the DLC and bonus content in one set. They have it for PC, Mac, as well as the, you know, the Xbox One and the PS4. Because that one was as close, we've talked about that quite a bit, but as close as you can get to being in an actual Alien film. And, you know, the other day I was playing it, hadn't played it in a while, and I'm crawling through the vent, and lo and behold, I turn around and there's Sparky right there. And I'm at the back end of Sparky with that tail, and I've got a flashlight on him. And Sparky turned around and, let's just say, was not too impressed to find me in its air vent putting a flashlight on it. And that's all she wrote. And that, you know, and that's the thing. You're going through going, I've crawled through the air vents so many times. Now, common sense in seeing the film says, yeah, these things take the air vents. But I'm like, yeah, you know, I've seen the cut scene where there'll be a scene where it's in the air vent, and I'm sure it was probably going to be something scripted where it comes out and does its bit, and then you, you know, miraculously escape. And nope, it was right there. And, of course, the final thing I have is a fairly new one, but it's the PlayStation's Until Dawn, which, for me, has been very good at taking the classic horror games and giving them new life because it's not scripted. It's literally like an interactive choose-your-own-adventure. There, I'm told there are scenarios where everyone can live. There are scenarios where certain people die and don't. And it, the game changes based on the choices you make in it. In terms of the fates of the characters, you get to play the different characters. And it's a lot of fun. I definitely have been enjoying that a lot. In fact, a few weeks ago, I wrote an article saying, you know, if they were to ever do this for PlayStation VR, it'd be a game changer. And, of course, I got called every name in the book. People said, you're an idiot. It's a fixed camera game. This would never work like that. And then, lo and behold, Tuesday at the Paris Game Week conference, Sony announced, dun-dun-dun, they have a VR Until Dawn game coming. Now, it's not Until Dawn. It is a new game in the Until Dawn universe. Nonetheless, great minds think alike. They obviously took a look at it and said, hey, you know, if we could ever adapt this kind of game to VR, we'd be in great shape. And so there you have it, you know. Working in the industry, folks, believe me, I did get a grasp of what works, what doesn't work, and, you know, how things are done. So, wow, we've covered a lot of stuff, haven't we?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention, Battleborn is looking for folks for their live-action tech demo that's currently going on right now. So Google it up, Battleborn demo, get your download going, get in the game and play. And that's going to be it for us. We'll see you guys next month, and we'll try. What is Justin? What is Thanksgiving this year?
Let's see. I know it's on a Friday.
Thursday.
That's right. It's 26th, I think.
26th. All right. We will try. Let us make an effort because I know that's when we're launching the holiday gift guide. Let us try, and we will try to get our November Scootcast up in time for Thanksgiving, and that way we can just start rolling into the holiday season. But until then, guys, have a very safe and happy Halloween. Don't get yourself in too much trouble tonight, and we'll look forward to talking to you all soon.